que
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leading Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Amilcar. A 100 Amilcar. That's what I have to call Amilcar now. 100 Amilcar. What's going on, brother? How you doing, man? How's everybody going out there? Hopefully you guys can join us here in the chat room. Don't forget, we are on Pandora and iTunes. And we're, you know, we try to be here every Monday, man. It's just with work and everything. And now hearing that we might here in California go on another shutdown. Actually, I don't think we're the only state. I think New Mexico just got shut down already, right?
Yeah, and we'll probably be doing the same here in New York.
Folks, just wear your goddamn mask. Stop trying to be a rebel without a cause. You know what I mean? Help us out here. I wanted to spend some time here with the family, you know, the extended family for Turkey Day, but that obviously is not going to happen. But, you know, it's just too many folks. I'm not going to get too political here really quick, but just too many people trying to be... a rebel, and you know, it's screwing up a lot of folks, man. You know, honestly, it's screwing a lot of folks up, and it's not allowing us to be out there. You know, salute, A-Rod, how you doing, brother? Thanks for joining us here on Leaving the Ring. Philly, what's up, brother? How you doing, man? Thanks for joining us. Don't forget, we have a lot of other platforms right now. Honestly, we're countering Hispanics causing panic. So I apologize. I forgot all about that. They're on Tuesdays now, not Wednesdays.
Oh, it's shit.
Yeah, Hispanic causing panic. Censor is on Wednesdays now. So I apologize about that. But anyways, we're here on Leaving. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder may happen in 2021. Frank Warner, the co-promoter, said that the December fight for Tyson Fury that was supposed to happen next month is completely off now. So that's going to go into court. We'll talk a little bit about that. It's one of the topics that we have on our list. Terrence Crawford demolished Cal Brook. A lot of us thought, including myself, that it was going to be a much more competitive fight. It was a competitive fight for a couple of rounds. Yeah, you know, but we'll talk a little bit about that. And then Canelo back on DAZN, believe it or not. Isn't that kind of crazy? So that's definitely what we're going to talk about here on Leaving the Ring. Well, let's go with the results, man. From this past Saturday on ESPN. Let's talk a little bit about that here. Let's see really quick in the chat room. He says, I see a lot of people not wearing them out here in Fresno and San Jose. I see Chavez markets enforcing it only mostly. Yeah, it's kind of crazy, man. It's kind of crazy. And you know what? The spike is really, it's just not hitting like the hillbilly spots of the world. The country. A lot of paisas and raza, they're not wearing their masks, you know? They're not doing it. They're not believing in it, and they don't believe in science and stuff. So hopefully this next shutdown, it shakes a lot of folks, and they get like, hey, you know, I want to go outside too. Trust me, I want to be out there too. You know, we're stuck in the house, and we're bored out of our minds sometimes. There's only so much, sitcoms you can watch and movies and, you know, or so much so you can stand and look at each other for hours and stuff, you know? We all want to go out and see some new scenery, right? But anyways, let's get back to the fight here on Leaving the Ring. Terrence Crawford was able to get Cal Brook out of there in a very sensational fashion. Amilcar, break it down to us. What did you see in that fight?
Well, at first, I mean, from everything from the warm-up in the dressing room to the ring walk to the start of the fight, Cal Brook looked like a million-dollar fighter, man. Apparently $2 million, according to Joe Tessitore, but maybe we'll get to that later. I mean, that was just absurd. But, yeah, he looked great. I mean, round one, he came out, you know, he controlled kind of the center of the ring. He was flicking the jab. Actually, more than flicking it, he was really laying into the jab, stepping in with the jab. And, you know, then he threw really fast 1-2 combinations. He looked good. Second round, he looked good. Third round, Crawford kind of started to catch up a little bit. As most people who know were watching, he kind of decided to switch from orthodox into the southpaw position. And then fourth round, out of nowhere, boom, you know, vicious hook sends Kell Brook into the ropes. And from that point, it was only a matter of time before the stoppage came. It was a really impressive win by Crawford. I'm not one of these people who's going to be making, you know, accusations about how this fight wasn't good. It wasn't competitive. Kell Brook was washed up. Because I, going into the fight, considered Kell Brook to be a live dog.
Right.
And he said it himself. Best shape of his career. No excuses. And
right.
No one has ever done that to Kell Brook. Not even Golovkin. Those of you who saw that fight remember that Golovkin didn't even really put Kell Brook down. It was his corner that threw in the towel because of the eye injury and the fact that he was blinking and couldn't see and there was kind of a dent in his eye. This is a guy who can take a shot. And, you know, he took that hook and unfortunately he didn't take it the right way and he touched the canvas. What'd you see, Dave?
I saw the same thing. You know, I mean, here was a guy that went out there in great, tremendous shape, was using his jab, put it on him, you know, and then, you know, look, Terrence Crawford adjusted, figured him out, and that was the end of it. You know, he made these slight adjustments and he was able to get him out of there. And I mean, what could you really say? There's not much you could really say about it, you know?
No, I mean,
he
did
a great performance.
It was a great performance, and there's nothing you can say about it. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I can't see any of the PBC fighters doing what Terrence Crawford did to Kell Brook. You know, I've been saying for a while that I wanted to see Terrence against a real natural welterweight, you know?
Right.
And that's what we saw. That's what we saw. So he's answered those questions for me.
He did. You know, the one thing that impressed me the most was that with Brooke, first off, okay, was that he was using his jab, and I knew that that was going to be obviously a problem for Terrence Crawford. He was able to land in, sneak in that right hand. But what I think what confused Brooke a little bit was that Crawford immediately came out orthodox. He didn't come out in that southpaw stance, you know. I think he wanted to confuse him and make him believe that he was going to have to be concerned about that, you know. But overall, the you know, Crawford, I guess we got to remember that Crawford is a slow starter, you know. And sometimes we just kind of tend to forget he is a slow starter, you know. And he but, I mean, he did pick it up. He did pick it up. He did, you know, see it right away. What was the opening? He saw that Brooke was trying to fight on the outside. He was trying to control the outside. And Crawford also saw that I'm a lot quicker than him, you know. And then that punch that landed, it was really kind of an awkward punch, Amilcar. It wasn't like a straight jab. It wasn't like a, you know, sorry about that. It wasn't a straight jab or it wasn't like a hook. It was like in between both, you know, and it landed and it looked really, really good.
Yeah. And one thing, you know, I was about to say Kell Brook, one thing Terrence Crawford does better than probably any other fighter is hit with power when he switch hits.
Right.
I mean, that right hook was delivered with tremendous power. And like you said, it was very unorthodox kind of punch. Not the kind of punch you traditionally see in boxing, but he's able to do that. He's able to punch from different angles and he's able to hit with power from both sides. It's a really, really impressive skill that he has in that regard. And it's something, yeah, honestly, that's very difficult to prepare for.
So he got him out of there. Now he's talking about Manny Pacquiao. What do you think, man? You know, obviously, Bob Arum is saying he's got to have a live gate. You know, reason is because the amount of money that both men are going to be asking for, you know, walking even off of that performance with Terrence Crawford, I don't know, is it wrong for me to believe that he's still considered the B-side going into negotiation, even going into this fight? Because the major draw for the fight would be Manny Pacquiao. He's very sensational, what he did to Keith Thurman. He definitely brings a whole country behind him, but he's got a strong Mexican-American and Mexican following. So Is it wrong for me to believe, Amilcar, that he's going to be the A-side and they're going to have to really give him more of the percentage in that fight? I mean, if they're not willing to give the percentage to Errol Spence Jr., which would be a 60-40, why would they do that with Manny Pacquiao?
Well, honestly, and I'm going to hurt a lot of people's feelings here, but it's honestly probably a 70-30 fight. And I don't mean that in terms of skills. I mean that in terms of business.
Right.
Yeah, money. Pacquiao is a proven, not just star in the United States or Philippines. He's a global star. He moves the needle everywhere. You guys remember when he fought in Macau and kind of started the at that point, start of what was supposed to be the kind of entry point for Macau to be like a major player in boxing. He can go anywhere. He's received offers in the past from the Middle East. He's, you know, obviously could sell out places in Europe, including England. He's a global star. Terrence Crawford is a great, great boxer. Is he a crossover mainstream sports star? I don't think he's there yet. And, you know, he sells tickets in Omaha, which is great.
He sells out in Omaha, you know?
He sells out in Omaha, but he's yet to be proven as a hot commodity across the United States. You know, we haven't seen him sell out a Staples Center. You know, we haven't seen him sell out a big arena in Vegas. We haven't seen him sell out the Madison Square Garden here in New York, where I live. So, you know, it's difficult to make a case that he should, you know, be able to demand a fight purse anything bigger than that. I would say, especially consider, let's be frank, Pacquiao doesn't really need to fight. He's, what is he, 42? I mean, to get me out of
competitive, you know what I mean? Though, I mean, that's just what, you know, when we think about fighters of the past, and you know, when folks go like, oh, you know, the fighters in the past would have done this, they would have done that, you know, the truth is Manny is a throwback. I mean, the guy's in his 40s, you know, and that guy's so competitive, he's not even willing to, you know, hang it up. I mean, he still feels like there's unfinished business out there, you know, and maybe he's trying to erase what happened with him and Floyd Mayweather, and that definitely would be the one to erase that, you know. Let's read some comments here off. Nopal, what's up, brother? What's up, Chicano Prophet? iMagic, how you doing, brother? Let's see.
Ilya Evo, we got him too.
Yeah, we got let me put what he said here. Philly Irish believes that Manny Pacquiao beats Crawford. What do you think about that?
It's tough to say. I mean, Manny rises to the occasion, and he beat Thurman, you know, so, and he beat Thurman convincingly.
He's a southpaw.
You know what?
Power in both hands, and he's got speed still. He may, you know, he might have skipped a little bit of his beat, you know. And I think it's just because of, you know, there's a few things. His age, obviously, is wear and tear, but I think the size. And Crawford, I mean, going in with Brooke, you could definitely say he's a full-fledged welterweight. His size was there, you know. It wasn't like Brooke was overtowering him or outsizing him at all. And, you know, Crawford actually even looked the stronger of the two right off the gate when the bell rang, you know. So, I mean, it's an interesting fight. I would really have to sit back and think about that. Can Manny Pacquiao, if the fight is signed and set to go, could he pull off the upset?
I got a scenario for you, Dave. Manny Pacquiao, well, for this to work, it would obviously have to happen in Vegas. But Manny Pacquiao delivers two vicious low blows to Terrence Crawford. They go to replay, and they say they were legal, and Manny Pacquiao wins.
He has a Russell Mora? Is that what you're saying?
As long as Russell Mora is the referee, I mean, right. I might have it.
And Robert Byrd is looking at the monitor for 30 minutes, scratching his head, wondering what he's looking for. Like, I don't know. What the hell? What is this? Wasn't this fight supposed to happen tonight? You know, I imagine Canelo, Spanks, Andrade, Terrence, Caleb, and Smith. That is to be seen, my friend. It definitely is to be seen. You know, everybody still is anticipating this fight. They want this fight. Errol Spence Jr., who's got a fight scheduled at the end of this month, November here, against a very dangerous opponent, Danny Garcia. Now, I know a lot of folks don't think Danny has a prayer. I actually do think he does. And it's, you know, and the people that believe this, it's really coming off due of the accident. They're thinking the accident, they're not quite sure yet how much has affected Errol Spence Jr. But at the same time, are we forgetting that, you know, Danny was very competitive against Thurman. He made Thurman change his game plan in the second half of the fight.
Yes,
Danny,
he did.
Danny likes to swing for the fences with his right hand. You know, the one thing that Danny's probably dropped since moving up to weight, which is the welterweight division, is his legs. He doesn't use them as much. He doesn't move as much, and he doesn't box as well as he used to. Ever since knocking out Amir Khan, he's been a kind of a different fighter.
You think he's been in love with his power a bit too much, Dave?
I think he does. I mean, I think he has. I think that he's become a one-handed fighter and a very good one-handed fighter, if that, you know. But going off of that, you know, if Errol Spence does, if, or whatever, gets past Danny Garcia, Swift, you know, that negotiation table's got to be open up. And again, this is where Terrence Crawford's ego and pride's got to take a step back and allow those two fighters to really look eye to eye and figure out where are they really at in their careers. If Errol Spence looks sensational and he struggles, I mean sensational and doesn't struggle against Danny Garcia, you know the betting's going to be for him. And you obviously know that PBC is going to want to ask for more money. You know, even if he looks terrible, even if Danny gives him a very tough fight, which I think that's going to happen, you still got to admit it's Errol Spence. You know, coming off his last two pay-per-views, he did, you know, really good with them. And being that somebody once told me, he goes, well, it was Mikey Garcia, but okay, with Sean Porter, he did similar numbers in pay-per-view buys here. So you got to admit that it's Errol Spence that does bring the numbers that people want to watch, you know? So again, does Terrence Crawford this time sit there and listen to himself, or does he listen to Bob Arum saying, like, no, we need to hold off. We shouldn't do that.
Yeah, and the question, too, is it's been floated around, especially since Saturday, is how much longer Crawford's even going to stay with Bob Arum. I mean, is he going to re-up on his contract? You know, I think his contract is valid through next year. I've heard one fight. I've heard two fights. But definitely by late next year, we could definitely see a situation where Crawford is a free agent mid to late next year.
I hope so too, man. Sorry guys, I'm over here trying to, I'm going to put up the number right now. Let me put this in really quick. Okay. But before I even put the number up, let's play promoter here. How about that? Mm-hmm. You guys want to play promoter here on Leaving the Ring?
Let's play promoter.
All right, let's play promoter here on Leaving the Ring, guys. All right, we're going to put up the number right here. And if just a few seconds, a few minutes, let me just throw this out there. If you were the promoter of Terrence Crawford and you didn't get Manny Pacquiao next or Terrence Crawford, who do you go after? Do you finally cross the street and admit that you got to start facing some of the PBC guys? Now, let's put up a list here. Who's on the roster right now? Okay. So if I have to look up who's the roster of the lineup, I mean, that's the lineup right there. Think about it.
Yeah.
Terrence Crawford, you got Errol Spence at number one, Terrence Crawford's number two, and you got Manny Pacquiao. Now, the other guys they could throw in there, that are notable, are definitely going to be. Let's see. Let's.
Danny Garcia.
You got.
Your Dennis
Danny
Uga.
Garcia, Ugas, Keith Thurman, and Sean Porter.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you are a promoter, like I said, we're playing promoter here.
Yeah.
No car. Who do you go after if you can't get Manny Pacquiao or you can't get Errol Spence Jr. next? What does Terrence Crawford do?
That is a tough one. Because really the question is, and we're talking about his next fight, Dave?
Yes, sir.
All right, so the question is, does he essentially stay with Top Rank longer or does he go to the PBC? Now, if I'm Bob, I definitely want the biggest money fight possible. And if we're taking away Spence, and you said, who else are we taking away? Porter?
Manny Pacquiao.
Oh, Manny Pacquiao. Okay, so yes, let's say PBC isn't keeping Pacquiao around for Crawford. They're saving Pacquiao for one of their other top welterweights, I think. So that leaves really just Thurman and Porter left at that point. And, you know, Terrence Crawford doesn't seem like he wanted to fight Sean Porter. So I guess that leaves really just Keith Thurman. Because I just...
No, Ugas?
I don't think... I think Ugas is a great fight for Crawford, but I don't think that's a risk for reward that Bob Arum would necessarily like to entertain, unless he knows that Terrence is going to be leaving Top Rank. Then maybe you go after a fight like that just to kind of end the contract. But, you know, if you're looking for the biggest money fight that's available at the PBC, you really got to go for Keith Thurman. Because I don't see the others as being possible, and I also
isn't Keith going under surgery though? Didn't he just announce that he has another surgery coming up, or he actually went through another surgery? Right? I could be wrong, but I thought, you know, I mean, the guy has surgery for every little thing. He got a pimple on his back. He's going to surgery every time you hear about Keith Thurman. There's a surgery coming up.
I know he does.
He's the poster boy for all surgeries, you know. I don't know if he's that, you know, if you walk into the hospital, into a medical room, I wonder if they should have his picture. As many surgeries this guy's been in and out of the sport, he should make a living as the poster boy for a medical exam rooms, you know, saying what not to do.
I mean, I'm kind of trying to think who else is out there that Bob might go after, but I mean, A-Rod, all of the other
A-Rod put this out there because Mikey Garcia is in the welterweight division. Mikey Garcia, Terrence Crawford, Mikey Garcia. That'd be a revenge for Bob Arum. I wonder if Bob Arum would be interested in doing that. Hey, if you guys want to call in and play with us here on Let's Play Promoter, call in at 917-426-8296.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, 917-426-8296. Yeah, it's gotta be that. I mean, Virgil Ortiz is out there. I think that would be a good fight, but again, it's a risk reward type situation. I think Thurman's the appropriate opponent if you're really playing promoter here, because he's got the name, but he's definitely beatable if you're Terrence Crawford.
You know, Philly Iris says, "Hey, move up to 154 and grab a title." That's actually not a bad idea, Irish. I wouldn't actually shy away from that, but I think he needs to exhaust first if he can make any of the fights. I mean, okay, he said this in the past, no Sean Porter, but I think he needs to revisit that. I think he needs to rethink it, you know, because if he wants to get any closer to Errol Spence or even show any incentive that he wants to fight the PBC guys, I think he needs to fight somebody in that PBC realm. Right? You know, because other than that, what's going to happen is that if he walks, like he said in an interview, I don't need Errol Spence to finish my legacy. Well, that's going to be a pretty bad stigma on your part, because everybody's going to say, well, you never fought the best, the other guy that was actually being voted in as one of the best welterweights. So how could we say that you finished your career right? If you didn't even try to make that fight, which I'm not saying he's not trying to make that fight, but what I'm saying that he's not even willing to fight the third guy down. I mean, take off Manny Pacquiao. Third guy down to me would be like Sean Porter. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that would be a great opponent for him, because I also think Sean Porter's beatable if you're Terrence Crawford. Again, the only issue there is that Crawford didn't want to take that fight earlier. I don't know why, but I've always felt that would be a good fight.
Absolutely. And no, Nado said, he goes, ¿Qué onda? ¿Qué pasó, Jesus? I'm sorry, it was Jesus.
We got somebody calling in now, Dave. Hello? Hello? It? Yeah. I think let's try that again. I think we might have lost him there.
All right, well, we try to figure out here.
Hopefully they call back. Yeah.
Try to call back in, guys. You know, this is a new feature that we added here on Leaving Ring. D-Style, what's up, brother? Jesus, what's going on? Again, let's go back, all right? So no Sean Porter. I don't know. You know, if he was to move up, like with Philly. Okay. So if he was to move up, like Philly was saying, in my opinion, he definitely left a lot of unfinished business. And it also, in my opinion, if he does that, a strong possibility he may not even go back down, you know? And, I mean, let's just say Errol Spence moves up. We want to see that at 154, but I don't think it brings the same type of fire that everybody want to see because at the time, you know, because at 154, I don't know if you can vote them in, either one of the guys yet, as being number one, having a number one spot at 154. It'll be suggested, you know?
All right, you hear that? We got a caller.
Call from
D-Style.
We got D-Style on the line.
Six.
All right, D-Style, is that you?
D-Style, you there, brother? Did we get D-Style on or no?
Hello. Hello, D-Style.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
What's going on, brother? I don't know what happened. We were able to hear you, D-Style.
Yeah, we heard
you. We heard you and everything. Again, you guys want to call in, 917-426-8296 here on Leave the Ring. Let's play promoter. If you were Bob Arum or Terrence Crawford, who would you go after if no Manny Pacquiao or Errol Spence Jr. next? He said he didn't hear anything on his end.
Okay. I'll fix it. I think I know what happened. Sorry, everyone. We're trying a new call-in feature here for the first time. I'm going to get it right.
I don't know how to give out the wrench, fellas. You guys are asking. I honestly don't know how to do that. You know? Unfortunately, yeah, I don't know how to do that, and I couldn't give it to you guys. I have to figure that out after, unless D-Sal can let me know right now. You know, I'm still all new to this whole, the whole chat room and how it works and et cetera, and stuff. But, okay, well, Amilcar figures that out. We might as well.
Yeah, I got it. I got it working now.
All right, absolutely. You guys want to call in 917-426-8296 here on Leaving the Ring. Let's talk boxing. Let's play promoter. Again, if you were the promoter to Terrence Crawford, who would be the next guy for you guys to suggest to go after? If no, Manny Pacquiao, which was suggested on Saturday night after Terrence Crawford defeated Kell Brook. You know, or no Errol Spence. Who would be the next guy?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the answer is definitely if he can get it, Keith Thurman. You got to stay clear of Ugas. You got to stay clear of Ortiz because they're high risk, low reward kind of guys. So, and also he's beat a lot of the other guys like the Mean Machine and everybody else on the list. I mean, I don't think anybody else wants to see Jose Cito Lopez or somebody like that. Or Jesse Vargas.
A-Rod is throwing out the mic. Is a good name. It's for sales. Garcia always brings it. But then again, it wouldn't not be the argument that he's still fighting guys that, you know, that he should beat, like Kell Brook. You know, we knew that he was going to beat Kell Brook. We knew that he was going to beat the Mean Machine. We knew that he was going to probably get in there and beat.
Call like from.
Can you hear us? D-Style, are you there? Okay, so again, we knew that he was going to be, you know, those guys, those names I just mentioned right now. So Mikey Garcia might still be that name where folks are going, well, I mean, yeah, it's a name that's going to bring out the Southern California fans, but what does that name really do for Crawford? And it goes back again, like Kell Brook. Let me ask you guys this. What did it really do for Crawford at the moment? Did it move the needle? Did it make anybody believe that he's this very dominant welterweight? I mean, it was a great performance. Don't get me wrong. It was good. You know, but like Jesus, who listens to the show, he said it. And not just him. A lot of folks said, this is the damaged good fighter here. You know, I thought it was going to be more competitive. I thought that, you know, it was going to go a lot longer. But, you know, he made it a short night. So what does that say about Crawford that, you know, and I said this too. Crawford fights at the level of his opponents. He obviously took Brook very serious. He went out there. And, you know, he did start off a little bit slow. He needed to figure out what Brooke was doing. And then he did the execution, you know. So, but it still leaves, I think a lot of folks are still wondering, is he the most dominant welterweight out there if he hasn't really fought any of the top three? I can't hear you here, Amilcar. You're on either on mute or something.
You can hear me now, right?
Yes, I can. What were you saying?
I was just saying that he's definitely it's tough to consider him that if he hasn't fought a top three opponent. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to figure out the phone line here, guys. So I apologize. You know, try to, you know, bring somebody on. But we'll get it. We'll figure it out. You know, I'm not sure if it's going to be figured out today on the show. But we'll definitely
figure it out. Trust me, it is. It is.
Huh?
It's going to be worked out. I promise, David. It is.
Yeah. No, it will be. You know, like I said, there was like a something that we brought onto the feature. We knew that, you know, doing it live, you never know, you know, so we gave it a shot here. All right. I think we played promoter enough here on Leaving the Ring. So let's go on to the other news, which I thought it was hilarious. And I think a lot of other folks thought it was hilarious to see that. Canelo Alvarez is back on DAZN. What are your guys' thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty crazy that he was able to work around Deloy and Golden Boy that way and got what he wanted, because he said all along that what he wanted to do was just fight.
You know, I mean, look, I honestly... And I got a lot of emails on the Leaving the Ring, people asking me what I was thinking, and even talking about my tweet, asking me about my tweet that I had said. My curiosity would now lies on Gennady Golovkin. What does he do? You know, now that when the announcement of the breakup between Golden Boy and Canelo and DAZN releasing from the contract, I thought it was going to shake up a lot of feathers among the middleweights, because a lot of them were in there. Be hopes that they were going to get a shot at these sweepstakes of Canelo. And so I was like, okay. So when they brought up Caleb Plant, I was like, okay, it's going to go PBC. I knew that. I had a big feeling. It wasn't going to go pay-per-view. It wasn't enough time. Reason being is because there's been, we've had quite a few pay-per-views already this year. Okay. So, and I thought it was just too early, too soon to kind of push it and market it, which the PBC would have done on Fox and on Showtime. So the best route was to go back to DAZN, which was a brilliant move. It was a smart move, because now he's actually taking the whole pie. It's not giving a piece of it to Golden Boy, you know? So, a good for Canelo. It was a smart business move. I can't hate on that at all, you know?
No, I think it was a very smart move. I mean, when you don't have to have a middleman, cut the middleman. If you want, Dave, I can try to bring D-Style back on. I've figured it out, and I can give him a call.
Yeah, let's do it here. Yep, absolutely. Can
you hear the ring? Can you hear the ring?
Yes, I can.
All right, here we go.
Call D-Style in and see if we can get him on here. Yeah. Anyway, we're waiting for him to Tony Roma. Maybe his fantasy matchmaking would be Virgil Ortiz in Crawford. And DAZN throws a ton of cash to get Crawford on the playing field. That'd be really interesting, you know?
Is DAZN throwing cash around that like that, though, anymore?
Not yet. I mean,
it doesn't seem like it.
No, I think they're out of that. You know what, though? DAZN wasn't the one that was throwing around that cash or saying they had that kind of cash. You know, remember, it was Eddie.
Yeah, it was actually
Eddie Money. It was Eddie Money.
Eddie did Big Buck Turn.
Yep. You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, you know, good match, bad match, Canelo versus Smith.
I think it's a good match.
I think it is a good match. I think that, you know, Kellen Smith is a solid 164. Has he had some bad performances? Yeah, he has. You know? The thing is Canelo has really kind of moved over to a different level, a different part of his career. He's finally got it together, you know, whereas when he was campaigning at 154, even at 147, he still had a lot, there was still a lot to grow on him, you know. Now he looks like he's got his man straight. Now he looks like he's just fully developed. He's really found who he is. You know, he's got the counterpunching, the head movement, the footwork. Overall, the IQ is definitely there. And I think he's going to be, just honestly, to tell you the truth, guys, he's going to be very tough to beat. Whether you want to call it cherry picking or not, it's going to be a very tough gig for anybody. And that in 100 to from the 160 to 168, it's going to be tough for somebody to beat him there. At 175, now I think that it's, you know, it was a great move. It was a smart move to go to go fight Sergey Kovalev. But really, honestly, yeah, to stay in that division with some of the lingering monsters at 175 would be a bad idea, in my opinion. But you never know with the Canelo's team. They see something, and they execute it, and they go after it.
I mean, I do not see him beating Artur Beterbiev, and I see him struggling a bit with Bivol just because of his boxing ability and his size. I mean, yeah. Jean Pascal has a secondary title. I mean, that's a winnable fight, I think. At 175, I think that's a winnable fight.
It is a winnable fight because Pascal's got so many miles already on him, you know.
Yeah.
And then let's be honest, Pascal's footwork isn't the greatest. He's sometimes very, off balance. He is explosive, but you know, one thing that Bernard Hopkins was able to do that Canelo has is jab. And Bernard was able to really just keep him at bay and you know, hold him off there with that jab. And I think that Canelo, being the younger guy, the much fresher guy, really just keeps him, Pascal, actually makes Pascal look his age, or, you know, makes him look like where he's supposed to be at in his career right now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. I mean, Pascal had a little bit of a resurgence, you know, when he won what was, I guess, kind of considered to be an upset when he took on, it was Marcus Brown, I believe, right, Dave? When he won his secondary title. But, yeah, the other thing, too, is with Pascal is when he gets hit, he kind of has a tendency to go to war. I would love to see that fight just because I think it would be exciting. But other than that, and I'm saying Pascal only because he has a secondary title, and I guess I'm playing promoter here again a little bit because Canelo now is his own promoter.
Oh, wait a minute. You want to play promoter with Canelo?
Yeah.
All right. Let's play promoter.
All right. So for those of you interested in kind of the background here, in terms of the producing and tech side, essentially what was happening before was I was trying to take calls on a different computer without accounting for the fact that I needed a two-way connection for voice and for the person to be able to hear us. So it's sorted out. If anyone wants to call back in, the number is 917-426-8296, 917-426-8296. The mix-up earlier is all on me.
There we go. So we got it all sorted up. Chicano Prophet, Dave, do you honestly think that this is a valid argument to call it a cherry pick, or are you just humoring the haters? I'm not trying to humor anybody, but I'm calling it how I see it, and I think that no matter who Canelo goes after, like even if he went after the Charlos right now or anybody else, somebody's always going to call it cherry picking, you know?
Oops, look like we got a call, Dave.
All right, let's take this call here.
Yep.
Let's see how that works. But again, Chicano Prophet, I just think whoever he decides to pick at this moment is going to be called cherry picking. Even Caleb Plant was considered to some folks as cherry picked.
Hi, who's there on the line with us? Yep, I can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Who's speaking?
This is Kevin from Chicago.
Kevin?
Yep.
Kevin, thank you for joining us, Kevin. What are your 2 points?
In Andrew Maloney's situation.
Yeah.
That's my first point. So I called it to Jerry Cooney and Randy Gordon's podcast, their radio show on Sirius XM. And basically their narrative was it was just a mistake, just incompetence. That seems to be the running theme that everyone likes to say. It's just incompetence. It's just a mistake. No, this is not a mistake. This is corruption. You see it time and time again. And even if it's just the simple fact they want to protect their referee, they don't want to make them look bad. They want to act like Las Vegas commission is always on point. The referees are always on point. That's corruption. Simple as day. But man.
You know why it took 30 minutes? Let me just throw you in. Let me just throw this in there. You know why it took 30 minutes for them to actually come up with a result of what direction they were going to go with the decision? It was how they were going to word it. That's what really it came down to. How were they going to word this and make sure that everybody's on the same page before they made their announcement? You know, look, if you have, there was 5, maybe 6, 7 officials, experienced officials, that were watching tape, and they all were scratching their heads and looking at each other. You know, I mean, Saturday night we were live on G-Funks, and I was literally at disgust with it because I was watching these guys scratch their heads, and it had like they had this like look on their face, like what are we looking for? What are we looking at? You know, and remember this, they've done this in the past. They were confused with the hearing fight. They've been confused with their judging, you know, so this is kind of common in Vegas. This is nothing new. And I always go back again, is that they need new blood in the officials, these older cats, you know, and I hate to say it, you know, sometimes are not just quick enough to catch it or see it, you know. And Russell Mora, this is not the first time he's dropped the ball. You know, no, Albeco would be a guy right now standing up. I asked somebody in the room, and I said, hey, does anybody oppose of Russell Mora continue being a referee? Albeco would stand up and say, yeah, me. You know, this guy let another fighter hit me in the balls too many times.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's, I don't know if it's corruption, but it was definitely trying to save face and protect a referee that made a bad call. And guess what? I mean, he's a human being. Human beings make mistakes. But what the fuck is the point of having an instant replay if you're not going to use it appropriately?
Yeah, you know? They pick and choose when they want to use it. That's the crazy part. Yeah,
that's the thing.
They're not even consistent on whether they're going to use it or not, you know? And that should have been the first thing. You know, and remember this, I had said that it was a thumb in the eye, you know, but it wasn't intentional. It looked like that's what happened. Sometimes it's a freak accident, you know, because the thumb is sewed on to the upper part of the glove and stuff. But I mean, these are experienced guys. Don't they know this? You know, I mean,
especially when you look it over for 30 minutes. I mean, it was absurd. Kevin, you said you had a second thing you wanted to say.
Yeah, my last thing. The 20 is Randy Gordon said he was the head of the FBI, or he worked for the FBI, Bob Bennett. So, I mean, that's how trustworthy he is. He worked for the FBI. Come on, he ain't gonna do anything like that. That was, I can't believe he actually said that. He worked for the FBI. He's not corrupt. Just insane. But as far as Canelo goes, I gotta say, this Smith fight, I don't know. I think he saw vulnerability with Smith in his last fight. A lot of people think Smith actually lost that fight. So he's same thing we did with Kovalev. Kovalev nearly got knocked out by a rookie, and he's trying to almost like a cherry pick. I wouldn't call it a cherry pick, but he's favoring the odds because Caleb Smith definitely didn't look good his last fight. I would have much rather seen him in there with even the Caleb Plant. I think he chose. I think he poses more threats just with his elusive style.
Yeah,
he does. You know, I mean, they're with Charlo, with the Reddit scene with Andrade, all these guys. Caleb Smith, I think he's going to outclass him and probably finish him with a body shot or something. What you guys thought? Thank you.
I'm thinking. Oh, he dropped. He left off the line. So I'll finish my thought, though.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking of the Callum Smith fight. It may have been a situation where he just wasn't motivated to train for Ryder and kind of fought to the level of his competition. But, it's really tough to say. I personally would have liked to see Canelo in there with, I would have liked to see him in there with Charlo. Caleb Plant. I mean, Jermall Charlo is probably too soon, obviously, but yeah, Caleb Plant would have been good. But I'm not unhappy with the Smith fight, though. I'm not unhappy with it. What about you, Dave? And then let's try to get him deep now because he called. He called us.
Listen, I think that Caleb Smith. Kevin, like you're right. You know, he saw some weakness there. He saw something that he could take advantage of. And that's just all part of the game, That's all part of what the trainer's supposed to do. Freddie Roach was notorious for doing it. Floyd Mayweather Jr. and his team were notorious for doing it. They looked at something. They saw, okay, there's some holes in this guy's game. This is a good fight for us, okay? Canelo's obviously playing that route now because he's the money man. He's a cash cow, Caleb Plant, I loved that fight when it was announced. I wasn't sure if it was going to happen because, like I said, where was it going to go? Okay. Because the money that has to be given to Canelo, what Canelo is going to be asking for, could they put it on Fox? Was Fox? There was no way that was going to happen. They're looking for a live gate or something like that. And they probably would have got it in Texas. That would have been a problem. But the problem would have been marketing and pushing that fight to be on pay-per-view. And the first thing immediately in my head was like, well, look how many pay-per-views right now that folks have dished out. And towards the end, going into Christmas and all of that, do people really want to fork out their hard-earned money, being now that you might have to be back on lockdown? I don't think so. And I think they thought about that, that if they weren't going to push people to do that, they had to maybe have more time to build it, But I think Caleb Plant, I agree with a lot of folks, Caleb Plant, style, it's troublesome because Canelo in the past has had trouble with pure boxers in his career. So, yeah. Who do we got? We got D-Style on us with finally?
D-Style on the line, yeah.
D-Style,
what's up? How's it going?
Good, man. How you doing?
Apologies for earlier with the connection. My fault.
You know, just out here causing panic. That's all. Can I answer the question about what would I do as put my promoter cap on? The first thing I would do.
Hold on, D-Style. Hold on. Let's
let it bury my fighter.
Let's play promoter.
Go ahead, D-Style. What would you do if you're a promoter?
I wouldn't do an interview with The Athletic and get quoted saying that I'm losing money with my fighter. My fighter's not worth the money I'm paying him.
That's not the first time, though. Bob Arum's done it before. He did it with, he's done it with other fighters, especially with Rigondeaux.
Yeah, but I mean, it's something I wouldn't do. It just
no, I know that.
Seem more business, really. But Arum's an old guy. I don't think he's worried about the next 20 years. You know what I mean? So it is what it is. But look, as far as the replay, I mean, look. If you're going to get it wrong, at least do it quick. You know what I mean? Like, don't keep us waiting and do the opposite. I look for every reason in the book to not overturn it. That's what it seems to me. And the only thing people got are these still pictures that really are not head collisions. I mean, if you look at it in real time, there's not like a big clash of heads really that happens.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
But then, I mean, talk about doubling down. I mean, the first they say, there was definitely a headbutt. And we looked at the replay, there was no headbutt. Yes, there was. It was two of them,
mm-hmm.
Like, just double down and just, that's the new way of doing things, I guess. You know what I mean? I'm just waiting for the Nevada State Athletic Commission to tweet out, there was a headbutt in all caps, and then we got it done. You know what I mean? That's what I'm waiting for. But
right.
I just don't believe that was caused by a headbutt. I think the statement they were saying, see, there was a fracture or whatever on the orbital bone. When have you seen guys at this weight class cause that? Like, what do you mean? Like they fracture orbital bones all the time in all weight classes. That's one of the most, easiest bones to fracture. Women have done it. They don't hit anywhere near as hard as men. And they get fractured, orbital bones. So I don't know if it's fracture or not, but I don't know. The whole thing is loony to me. It's all dumb. And talk about everyone's watching, but approximately a little under 2 million people were tuning in, right? And if they got one thing, they got drama, because people love drama, you know?
Right.
And you got to just love how it just took forever to get it done. But here's my issue, and who the hell's Bob Arum to go up to the commission and demand a review, like if he's the coach of a football team, throwing in the challenge flag? Like, what is this? You're a promoter, bro. Like, sit your ass down. I wonder if Arum didn't pressure them like that, would they have even taken that long and looked over it all? I don't know. I have a little bit of an issue with that. I have boxing's a little different than other sports.
Right. They shouldn't have no contact. And in all honesty, promoters, even the matchmakers, even the PRs, there should be distance between each other, because it does sway the thought process of what way they're going to go with a decision, especially in an important decision like that. Amilcar, what were you going to say? What were you going
to
add?
I was just going to say that I agree that it's kind of inappropriate for Bob Arum to be like behind the TV monitors, screaming F-bombs at guys while they're like doing their reviews. But at least in other sports, there's like a formal process to like challenge something, I think that they've got to figure out a way to do it like they do in tennis or volleyball or the NBA or the NFL, where like the athlete or the coach can get a certain number of challenges. And, at the end of the round, they look at it. But in this case, they had all the time they needed. It was at the end of the fight. If it's an infraction that causes the end of the fight, like, there should be a process to like challenge it officially, I think.
Well, there is going to be challenge, for the super flyweight WA regular champ, Franco, who got in there with Andrew Maloney. Andrew Maloney did file an appeal to overturn the no decision, so they're hoping to do that, and Bob Arum obviously was parading that was going to move forward. They were going to, plan on doing that, Robert Garcia, I think Robert Garcia was in the line of your thought there, D-Style and Amilcar and everybody else's. Yeah. What was Bob doing over there? Because Robert Garcia was like, hey, nobody from Gold Boy was here to kind of defend us. We were here as the lone dogs by ourselves out here. Bob was over there able to throw some influence. And they left, Golden Boy left us kind of in the dark, So, if Robert Garcia, if he's upset about it, I agree with him wholeheartedly, because he's right. Bob Arum should have been over there in throwing any type of influence to those officials. And really, those officials should have been out in the open when they were reviewing this. Should have been in a private room.
Replay, for a certain team, it wouldn't look right at the end of the day.
No.
So it just, and here's the thing, in the NFL, they have a process, like Amilcar said, in the NFL, whatever the referee calls stands until there's enough evidence to overturn it, right? Well, we don't even know that's a thing in boxing. All we know is that they review it again. That's all we know, And apparently, they did with the, I'm kind of against it, because one, they're not going to get it right anyway, as we just saw. And two, look at what they did to Martinez over there in England against Edwards.
Oh, that was terrible.
That was an atrocious call, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, replay, yes. In my opinion, man, replay should be reviewed only in, I think, with knockdowns and stuff like that. and for headbutts, if a ref calls a headbutt, there should already be an official reviewing it to see if there was a headbutt or not, to then overturn it if necessary. And that's it.
That's a great point. That's a great point. It should be done in real time. And then by the end of the round, they should have already, you know, figured it out. Because if the ref calls a headbutt, you know what time of the round you need to look at. It's only, what is it going to take, 10, 15 seconds of a round? And you just look at that 10, 15 seconds a couple times. You either confirm it or correct it. That's a great point, D-Style.
Yeah. But, hey, guys, I got to go get my show ready, so I got to run. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks, D-Style. I'll jump on and join the chat in a few.
Well, there you go. If you guys want to call in, you certainly can. Let's talk some boxing here. Jump on and tell us what you guys think. 917-426-8296 here on Leave It in the Ring. Any last final thoughts about Maloney and Joshua Franco here, Amilcar? What do you think?
You know, Saturday night, I was really upset about the result, and I felt really bad for Maloney. And, you know, today my mind actually, my mind switched a little bit today, though, because I was watching an interview with Bob Arum, and he pointed out that the English actor Ellen Mirren was like tweeting out about the fight and how mad she was about the result. So I actually think this might end up working out in Maloney's favor. I mean, more people are going to know his name, and then people are also going to sympathize. Yeah, and they're going to sympathize with the guy going into his future fights. So if he can come back from this, get his mind right, get focused like he did last time, you know, and repeat what he did or even improve upon what he did, you know, he has the potential to make himself a star because, as D-Style said, a lot of people watched this fight. A lot of people were upset about the result. And those people will be rooting for him and will become his fans.
You know, okay, let's go over. Referee Russell Mora was the ref for the fight between Maloney and Franco. Again, it was determined that it was a cause of a head clash that stopped the fight. It prevented Joshua Franco to continue. It started off in the first round, as many of us thought and believed, it was off a jab that Andrew Maloney was throwing. Now, it did take 30. It was a 30-minute delay. The NSAC did finally determine it was a no decision. Now, Top Rank and Andrew Maloney are filing to overturn the decision from a no decision. My thoughts is they might, in my opinion, because it did spark up so much controversial, and there's, like you said, there's people from over the pond, they're tweeting about it, and it has generated a lot of interest. Is maybe throw out this court file and just seek for the third match because it's going to be that much bigger. And it would be, I would put it as, again, if we're playing promoter, I think it's a headliner fight. And I think it's going to be a lot of folks wanting to watch it on ESPN because there was a lot of eyes for the Crawford and a Brook fight.
Yeah, it's become a big deal. And definitely it's moved from a co-feature to, you know, a main event based on what happened Saturday. It's a great point, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, even the hardcore, us hardcore fans, we were anticipating the rematch because the first fight was really good, you know, and, wanted to find out, was this a fluke for Franco? Can Maloney make the adjustments? Was he going to go out there with a different game plan? And we were kind of getting all of that, okay?
Yeah.
We were starting, the action was there, was picking up. These guys were trading, and it's almost got, not just from Maloney, it got stolen from the rest of us as well that were tuning in on Saturday night. So, to me, it is a main event now. It has moved up the ladder. Why not make it happen the third time around? We got somebody else on the line here on Leaving the Ring?
We did, but they
dropped off
here. Yeah. So,
all right, you guys want to call in? Certainly can. 917-426-8296 is a new number for me to memorize here. Don't forget, we are on Pandora. The Shoeshine will be up later up tonight on Pandora. Hispanics Causing Panic. It starts in about 30 minutes, so you guys want to head over there to D-Style's channel. Don't forget to hit that like button and the subscribe button. And remember, you know, hit the notification so you know when we go on live here. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Tyson Fury. Now, Tyson Fury was pretty adamant. I'm not giving Deontay Wilder the rematch because of the things that he has said. Okay, which let's remind everybody some of the stuff that he said here at Milcar.
Yeah.
He said that Tyson Fury is a cheat. He's a cheater. Yep. He wants a cheater, always a cheater. Okay, he has accused Tyson Fury of tampering with the gloves. He has accused Tyson Fury for having an egg weight in his glove. Not only has he accused Tyson Fury, he's accused everybody around him. Okay, we are getting
the call now.
All right. So let's see, before we move on to that subject and talk about the arbitration that Deontay Wilder's team has filed, that's already knocked off the December fight that Fury was going to be involved with. Frank Warren is saying that now we're going to have to hold off. Who do we got with us on the line?
602.
602, what's on your mind, brother?
Yes.
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, hey guys, hey, sorry. Just wanted to quick touch base. I'm not sure if I joined you guys. It's a little bit late here on the stream. But just wanted to talk about, did you guys see, talking about the Maloney fight a little bit, but I guess the viewership for the Crawford fight was a little over 2 million people.
Right.
I wonder how many viewers actually lost because of that 30-minute gap.
You know, I wanted to complain about that before we went into the last segment. ESPN just been fucking up, like left, right, and center. I wouldn't be a show if I didn't complain about ESPN a little bit. I mean, last Saturday, it was the app, as usual. Right. I was watching on the app. They ended the broadcast on the app. I wasn't sure what to do. Then I go to watch the fight, and then it's 20 minutes of a blowout football game. I didn't understand if it was like a college playoff game or one of the major bowl games, but it was a blowout football game. Between two teams in the they could have easily just switched it to ESPNU or some other ESPN station and started the fight on time. Well, what do you think, Dave?
No, I agree with you. We were actually sitting back and talking about it, waiting for this fight. Remember, Milk? And then I was like, yeah. What's going on here? And then I was like, am I on the wrong channel? And luckily, getting on social media, it saved the day. Everybody was like, hey, you got to switch over to this channel now. And that's what we did. So,
yeah. So I guess he had his question answered, and he's taking off. Thank you, caller, for your call.
Yeah, we didn't get your name. Remember, if you're going to call in, state your name so we know who we're talking to. Again, the number is 917. Hold on. 917. I'm looking over here. 426-8296. Okay, going back with Tyson Fury
and
Wilder here. Okay, so arbitration obviously is going to either determine whether or not Tyson Fury's got to face Deontay Wilder. Whether or not Wilder's accusations were crazy, were they nuts? Did he fall into this whole conspiracy thing? Whatever it is, the courts are going to decide if a third match is going to happen. Whether it's demanded by the public or it's needed for a trilogy, the courts are going to decide that, and that's how they're going to determine whether or not Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder are going to go at another runaround in 2021. Frank Warren is saying, hey, now we're looking at February or March to see whether or not that fight will happen. And you never know. The courts may also even push it even further because we don't know what's going to happen whatever the courts are going to decide and determine. It might draw out a little longer. We don't know. But as of right now, Tyson Fury, you're not going to see him in the remaining of this year. Amilcar, what do you think?
So what I think is that it sounds like Joe Habib was right when we were on the round table and he was talking about force majeure and like, acts of God and kind of stuff, extending the contract. And, there was, I guess, a little bit of hypocrisy because, they did extend it once already because the bicep injury happened. So why wouldn't they be able to do it again? I think the main reason here is that Bob Arum and Top Rank didn't want to lose the $17 to $18 million at the gate during the last fight and didn't want to lose money by having to pay these two guys the guarantees that were promised in the contract.
Right.
I'm a little disappointed though because you know, if this gets dragged out too long, we're not going to see AJ and Fury, you know? So I think Tyson Fury is going to beat Wilder again. But let's say that fight happens in March, like you said, right?
Right.
And it, between that time, Joshua's beat Pulev and then now has to face Alexander Usyk, because that's his mandatory, and I don't think Alexander Usyk is going to want to delay his championship fight. So the whole situation is very messy for sure.
Let me ask everybody this, okay? Does it feel like the sand in the hourglass for Anthony Joshua is quickly, fading out? Because I think everybody's in a rush. Like, I mean, Tyson Fury wants that fight. And the only one that's not in a rush to get in with AJ is Deontay Wilder. You know, he's fixed on getting the trilogy match with Tyson Fury. But I think Tyson Fury is looking at AJ is that if I don't get my opportunity now, if he beats Pulev or Pulev can't pull that upset, if I don't get it now, somebody else is going to have that second chance of hurting and stopping this guy. But here's the other thing, too. Deontay Wilder and his team, if he goes in a third match, and you're right, Amilcar, that Tyson Fury again obliterates him in that fashion he did in the rematch, which was an all effect. It was an astonishing stoppage because none of us thought that Tyson Fury was going to go out there and be able to muscle and push back Deontay Wilder or even knock him out. If he does that on the third match, where's Wilder's career at now? It could be really honestly, realistically, we could say it's the end of his career.
Yeah, and, you know, the problem is that AJ is vulnerable, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, we've seen it. We've heard it. You know, it's unfortunate, but the guy has changed since the fight with Vladimir Klitschko. You know? Yeah. Oh wait. Wait, listen up. I think I'm hearing something. I think it might be AJ. Is that AJ? I mean, the guy has turned into a little kitty cat, man, since the
I'll tell you what though, that's a pretty big kitty cat. I wouldn't want that kitty cat to scratch me, Amilcar, first off, okay?
yeah, But at the end of the day, I don't have the boxing skills and the fearlessness and the confidence in my skills like Andy Ruiz did. You know, right. The problem is that AJ has started to have problems with his chin and getting hit. And then what happens is he's kind of decided to just really focus on the 1-2, box super defensively. And you know what? When you do that, if you've got a guy who's coming at you and who's throwing punches, right. And is willing to take one, to give two or three, you're putting yourself in the position to lose and to lose on the scorecards especially. I wasn't impressed with his fight with Taka. I wasn't impressed with his fight with Joseph Parker. And I obviously wasn't impressed with either fight, really, versus Andy Ruiz. Not the first fight and not the second fight when he, you know, essentially boxed defensively against a guy who was super overweight and who, you know, I would have thought like a guy like Joshua should have been able to knock out, honestly. So,
right.
Pulev's not a pushover. I don't know what's going to happen there. And I think Usyk is definitely a live dog.
Yeah. I mean, Usyk obviously is now in the mix of things. You know, Pulev, if he goes back and watch the performances, especially what Andy Ruiz did to Anthony Joshua, you know, he would have to understand he's going to have to close that gap, you know. But the thing is, could Pulev take Anthony Joshua's punch? Because let's just not say that Andy Ruiz was able to go out there and pull this performance without tasting the canvas himself. He tasted the canvas before he made Anthony Joshua be submissive to what he was doing, you know.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so And remember this, this is the heavyweight division, you know. And I always thought that AJ was questionable, but it's the heavyweight division. A heavyweight, it can change things with one big punch here. Now, Pulev can do what Andy Ruiz did, but can he close that distance is my question here, Emil Carr, or anybody in the chat room. My question is, can he close that? Is his feet fast enough to close that distance? Is his hands fast enough to close that distance the way Andy Ruiz? Because see what Andy did, and you could really, I mean, and anybody could look at Andy and go like, ah, this guy, come on, look at this guy. You know, he's got a dad bod. There's no way, and that's what everybody thought. But even seeing the way he performed, it's still deceptive because there's athletic guys that probably think, well, if Andy can do it, I can do it. That's not necessarily always the case there, no. You know, Emil Carr. So it's very questionable. But I know that Tyson Fury thinks, oh, I can do that. And you know Tyson Fury could do it because he's that athletic. He's got a very awkward-looking body as well. Looking at the guy at 6'9", you would never think that Tyson Fury could be so smooth with his footwork, the hand speed, the pivoting, everything that you would normally see with a much smaller fighter, Tyson Fury does very well. But showing us what he did to Deontay Wilder, that added to his game. That added that he not only that he could box, but when he needs to become aggressive, he can do it, you know. But also, Tyson Fury has shown he does have, if you're able to connect with that chin, he gets dropped.
You see, my issue with Pulev is, you know, he's undefeated. His only loss, obviously, was to Klitschko. But you look at his two of his recent fights. I mean, Rydell Booker, he took him the distance. You know, that's not a good sign. That was his last fight. And we just saw what Filip Hrdzavic did to Rydell Booker. I mean, Rydell Booker should not be going the distance with a guy who's going to be fighting for the heavyweight championship. And you look before that, he had a Bogdan Dinu. Okay, I mean, Huey Fury, and before that, Kevin Johnson, again, took him the limit, you know? Mm-hmm. The same Kevin Johnson that got knocked the hell out by my boy Dynamite Dubois.
Right.
So, I honestly, jokes aside, and me joking about AJ's defensive kind of boxing at this point, I think this is a guy he can be offensive again. But you know, his chin is always going to be questionable, but I see him getting past Pulev. My issue is really what happens next, especially if it's Usyk.
Well, here's A-Rod has said, this is what A-Rod's saying right now. Did you guys hear that AJ's water was being spiked in the first fight with Andy Ruiz?
Oh, wow. That's funny. Yeah.
I think this is why there's a rush and why Bob Arum and Tyson Fury were not interested. I think there's numerous reasons why they weren't interested in the Deontay Wilder fight. But now the courts have stepped in, saying no arbitration. They might make the determination of whether or not the fight is going to happen, or it can end up swaying to Tyson and Tyson Fury and Bob Arum and Frank Warren. They go after AJ because, like I said, the hourglass is emptying pretty quick. I think that's how they're looking at it. It is emptying pretty quick for Anthony Joshua because he's so vulnerable. So vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know? And, let's go to the chat here really quick. We all know Fury won't be fighting Wilder now. We should really be Wilder's next opponent. Who should be really on Wilder's next opponent? Obviously, it can't be pay-per-view, right? Now, I don't know about that. I think it stays on pay-per-view, to tell you the truth. I think that's what Al Heyman and them would still try to continue to push, but they obviously would have to put something intriguing on the undercard and stuff. But we never know, though. You know, I think they have to look at really the economy now being, like I said, every state's looking to be shut down. So I think they would have to look at that, you know, and then they kind of go from there. Let's see. A-Rod, Andy Ruiz, like Pacquiao, is going to swing and tell one of you drop. AJ fought that fight the wrong way. I totally, totally agree, A-Rod. And, you know, he learned his lesson, and he decided to call in his inner Tyson Fury, because a lot of folks didn't believe that Tyson Fury would stand and trade. with Deontay Wilder. They thought that he was going to step and box what he did in the first fight. But instead, he came out and he looked like Andy Ruiz against Deontay Wilder. You know, again, I mean, overall, the whole division of the heavyweight, man, guys, you got to admit, it's just freaking interesting. You know,
very excited. I guess we'll talk about this next show, but I mean, two Saturdays from now, we've got Dubois versus Joe Joyce, and you know, I've been looking forward to that one.
Oh, yeah. I see that so one-sided. I hate to say, you know, and I'm never 100, but this is 100. I think that Dubois goes out there.
I'm bringing back the Mr. 100 on that Saturday.
100.
Trust, yep. 100%.
100%. Nopala says Wilder can beat Andy Ruiz. That's what Nopala says in the chat room. Wilder can beat. He didn't say beat. He said Wilder can fight Andy Ruiz. That would be a great fight. That to me would be a really, really good fight. But, you know, I think this is the problem. I think this is something that has to be mentioned as well. Like I said, a third fight and what you're seeing, and a lot of folks are seeing, Mokar, what you're seeing and a lot of people are seeing is that Tyson Fury is going to do exactly to what he did to Deontay in the rematch. What can Deontay Wilder really do in the rematch? What adjustments can he really do? Does he really believe all these excuses is what really prevented him of having a great performance on the night they faced each other in February?
Yeah.
A third match goes out there and Tyson Fury makes easy work of him. And I hate to say the word easy. Let me change that. Let me rephrase that. If Tyson Fury goes out there and again knocks him out again, that might be the end of his pay-per-view reign. That might be the end of him trying to get on pay-per-view. Because I think if he said, hey, listen, let's hold off. I'll fight Andrew Ruiz next. That would end up on pay-per-view, to tell you the truth. Even though Andrew Ruiz got lost to AJ, it was the fashion of how we lost. But my problem is that no matter how enticing you can name any other fighter to Deontay Wilder, is at the end of the day, Deontay Wilder is the guy that's making these final decisions. It doesn't seem like anybody is in that camp or in that management that's really sitting him down and saying, listen, maybe we should wait. Let's see how you look in the next fight. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's kind of rebuild your brand again. Because it just seems like Wilder is on this mission of getting back into, which he's exercising his rematch clause. We can't blame him. He has the right to do that, okay? But I just think that there's so much more money that he can go after at the moment while he's waiting for Tyson. Maybe he's also looking at the hourglass emptying out with Tyson Fury that maybe, well, if I don't fight him now and Tyson Fury goes off and fights AJ, beats AJ, he may retire. And I might never get that third shot. That might be the mind frame where Deontay Wilder is at.
The other thing, too, that I'll add to that is that it's the biggest payday for him. I mean, where else is he going to make $20 to $25 million? You know?
Exactly.
Maybe Andy Ruiz, but I highly doubt that. You know? He's chasing the money as well as chasing the win and vengeance.
I think he's chasing the vengeance more than the money, to tell you the truth. I think now it's really vengeance. I think he's so far gone into the depths of hell about this loss, man, that he can't believe what happened that night. Because I don't think in a million years, like ourselves, thought that Tyson Fury was going to go out there and have such a performance that he did in Mokar. Let's be honest. I did not think I wouldn't have. If somebody had told me, I mean, actually, there was people that were coming on leaving the ring. They were saying, like, he's going to knock him out. And I'm like, what? I don't know about that shit. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what you've been drinking or what you've been smoking. And guess what? They were smoking the good shit. They saw it.
Yeah.
It happened.
I was smoking the good shit. You remember that.
Yeah.
So let's turn into the chat real quick. Juan Etena says, with AJ being so vulnerable, doesn't it make it even better for us fans? Have a decent 4-6 heavyweight that can have a mini series. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I mean, AJ's vulnerability is one of the things that makes his fights exciting. That's what made the Andy Ruiz AJ fight exciting, at least the first one. When AJ's all defensive and, you know, boxing behind the jab and doing his best Vladimir Klitschko impersonation, and by that I mean Vladimir Klitschko post Lamont Brewster, and before that post Corey Sanders. It's a boring fight, you know. The commonalities between these two is once they tasted the canvas, they actually became very defensive minded fighters, and we all remember right. Vladimir Klitschko's reign. I don't see a reign by AJ moving forward to be any different than that.
Right, but he doesn't have the fundamentals like Vladimir Klitschko to.
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't.
Lewis, he just doesn't have that. You know, I mean, I like Anthony Joshua. I like what I saw of him when he came out. He looked like a heavyweight. He looked like a champion. But then you slowly started to see that there are flaws there. Does he have the temperament with Andy Ruiz? He did look defeated the way Vladimir Klitschko looked defeated against Corey Sanders, like the way Lennox Lewis looked defeated with Rockman. You know, could he make that comeback? We only seen him with that one comeback with Andy Ruiz, which was a very dull comeback, but it left more questions than satisfaction of saying he's back. You know. So AJ still is a very interesting fighter in just that sense that we just don't know. Is he a guy that just wants to try to cruise now all the way to 12 rounds of boxing and not engage? And if that's the case, then you got to start putting it on the other fighters. They got like Pulev's got to make a fight out of this. If he doesn't, if he's expecting what Andy Ruiz was expecting in the rematch, then that's on him. That's not on AJ.
I mean, this is going to sound harsh, but you know who he kind of reminded me of during the Takam fight? Was like a – oh, shit. I just had the guy's name in my head a second ago. Jamil McKline. You remember Jamil McKline?
Yeah, I remember Jamil. He's a governor now or a mayor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, super big dude, super right. muscular. Does really, really well when his offense is flowing. But once he gets hit, it's like a whole different story.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. That is definitely true. Even defenses AJ, if Andy wasn't a total slob,
yeah, he has
to cut the ring off, make another good fight if Andy can prove he deserves a trilogy. Well, that's what Andy's got to do. He's got to come back. I mean, where is he at? You know, I know he's with Canelo's trainer, but really, honestly, there was only talks that I was hearing was him getting in there with Kristen Nightmare, but I think that's all been killed. I think those talks have been shelved away. So at this moment, it's where is Andy Ruiz? What is he doing? I mean, God, it's so frustrating because here you had a guy that's marketable. People were jumping. People that didn't even know Andy Ruiz were jumping on the bandwagon of the dad bod. Okay.
Yeah.
Even the what was the freaking chocolate bar he was eating?
Snickers.
Okay.
Snickers.
Here he had something. He had something to market himself off of. Okay, like that guy Dogface. Look at that guy Dogface, dude. He's piggybacking off of, you know, the cranberry juice, and he's making all this money. You know, Andy Ruiz, and really in that sense, had that. He was able to market himself, and if he had somebody on his side, they would have really pushed that. And even though he lost to AJ, he didn't lose. Like, it wasn't a shutout. I mean, it was a shutout in the way AJ performed against him, but it wasn't a shutout that nobody wanted to see him. And Andy Ruiz, not only did he just screw himself by not training right, he killed his career by not even coming back. We haven't even seen him. So really,
and then
honestly,
dumping his trainer and blaming his trainer. That wasn't a good look either.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't a good look either. Tone Romeo says, all of these heavyweights have shown vulnerabilities and have been on the canvas at least once. It's the beauty of the heavyweight division that one shot can change the fight. You're absolutely right, Tone.
Well, A-Rod is saying that Andy Ruiz has got a YouTube channel. Now he's going to post videos. He's going to do the
Is it like one of those meeting channels?
It's going to be like Ryan Garcia. I thought
it was going to be like more like Guy Fieri or one of these cooking, like these fat cooking guys that go around the country and like go ahead and eat food everywhere.
You know who does really well with videos is Parker. You know?
Really?
Parker. Oh, yeah. You haven't seen his videos? Oh, bro, he's hilarious.
I got to check it out.
You got to get on Twitter. Get on his Twitter and check him out. I mean, he does some hilarious videos. And I think they're videos that I don't know if he has a TikTok account, but that should be on TikTok and stuff. I think we're all talked out here on Leaving the Ring, guys. I think we'll be back next week. Talk boxing here. And don't forget that Hispanics Causing Panic is starting right about now. So head over to D-Style's channel. And we'll catch up with you guys next week here on Leaving the Ring. Don't forget to hit the like button. Don't forget to hit the notification bell. And as always, if you didn't listen to the show, you're catching it late. Or you want to re-listen to the show at work with your earbuds. Hey, check us out on Pandora, and make sure you add us on Pandora. Again, guys, have a great night. Don't drink and drive, because you will spill your beer.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave.
Ladies and gentlemen, Thomas Caballeros.